Chapter 11. Failure. Rough weather always accompanied the late fall and early winters on the Rugothian shard cluster. The scholars attributed the disturbances to several shards that passed close overhead during those seasons, stirring up the air and casting large shadows across the land. Flooding of low-lying cities and fields was not unusual in autumn, and in winter snowy tornadoes descended from solid grey clouds like demon fingers to tear apart whatever they touched. Snow fell heavily and early in Rugoth, the winter after the first mother returned from Ogmir, and since that time the Shalane had noticed a change in her mother that disturbed her. Her eyes were tighter, her manner more stiff, and, the most telltale of all, she bit her lip more often, a sure sign that something uncomfortable was churning in her mind. While the Shalane had no inkling of what might be distressing the first mother, she felt certain it concerned herself. Getting her mother to admit as much proved impossible. Disasters fomented by the weather provided the first mother with plenty of reasons to be busy and to flippantly push aside her daughter's questions about what she might be feeling. The Shalane didn't doubt that many issues in Rugoth troubled her mother. She asked about the source of her uneasiness, but she only smiled and said that being the first mother always carried a weight with it, and that the Shalane should not be concerned. Then the Shalane pressed the issue, and her mother was not one to be pressed. As gently but firmly as possible, First Mother Mirel told her that nothing was the matter and that she should not ask about it again. The Shalane was crestfallen. She felt close to her mother, but since Mirel had returned from Ogmir, a certain distance crept into their relationship, and the Shalane felt keenly the want of support and affection her mother had always generously shared with her. Fenna was a good friend, but one who could not bear heavy burdens, and everyone else she knew would not accept weakness in the Holy Shalane. She left her mother's quarters fuming, Dacen trailing behind as she negotiated the maze at the quickest pace possible while still maintaining decorum. What she wanted now was to go into her room and read a book that would transport her out of the chambers of the Shalane and into some other place more suited for lighter spirits and laughter, items that had been in short supply since the winter began. The dark guard snapped to attention as she entered the antechamber of the Shalane's and turned toward her own quarters. As the Shalane and Dacen left the maze and crossed into the hallway where the door to her private chambers stood, Dacen circled around her quickly. The Shalane was startled by the forlorn expression on his face, and she put her hand to her heart as he knelt on both knees before her, clasping his hands as if in prayer.
"Please, Holy Shalane, forgive me," he supplicated. "Please let me back into your good graces again. I only wish to serve."
His handsome face set the Shalane's heart to pounding.
"Get up, Dacen," she commanded softly. "Why should you think that you have done anything that offends me, or that you have fallen from my good graces? You have done your duty well, and I have nothing with which I could ever fault you."
Dacen remained on his knees.
"I thank you for saying thus much. But you cannot expect my heart to fully take hold of such an assertion when such a wall stands between us. I mean no disrespect, and I know that I may not be the cleverest of men, but it is not the same between us as it was but a few months ago. You must reveal to me in what way I have wronged you, that I may make proper amends and win back your good opinion."
"You have not lost my good opinion, Dacen," she knelt before him, concerned. "From what actions of mine do you base this claim? Perhaps it is I who have wronged you."
Dacen's eyes widened.
"No, never, Shalane. You are perfection, and it is I, weak and vile, on which the blame must be placed. If you would but tell me what I must do so that you can feel to speak easily and happily with me again, to dispel the darkness I feel between us, I will exact whatever penance and go to whatever lengths necessary to win back your favour."
The Shalane wrinkled her brow. It saddened her to see him so indisposed and terrified, and she racked her mind, searching for some slight she might have made, or some word misspoken that would cause him such agony of spirit, but she came up empty. Tolnorians worried a great deal about propriety and honour, but she could not recollect any occasion where she had behaved poorly, save that she was taken to brooding more often of late. She reached out to him and lifted his head.
"I swear to you, Dacen, that I think as highly of you now as I ever have, and hold you in the highest esteem. If you sense some darkness, then I am sorry. How can I prove my regard to you other than my word that it is, indeed, as intact as it ever was?"
"A holy kiss, first daughter," he said.
eyes penetrating the veil. Only then will I feel at peace. The Shilling was taken off guard by his request and stood. He stood with her, eyes tortured.
Forgive me, Highness, he bowed. It is improper for me to ask it from you. I withdraw my request.
The Shilling thought hard, a strange and unfamiliar thrill building inside her. She had never kissed a man, nor had ever been asked to. Dayson was the kindest, best man in her acquaintance, and she considered him as much a friend as a protector. She preferred his company to almost anyone else's, and to see him racked with such misery drew out the healer within her, and he needed her healing. At least that is what she convinced herself of. Lifting his head again, her arm trembling, she stepped close and kissed him lightly on the mouth through her veil. The kiss lingered longer than she intended, his lips warm and inviting on hers, despite the barrier between them. She closed her eyes, thoughts addled, and an alarm rang out in her mind. She stepped backward, placing a hand on her lips. Dayson remained where he stood, face registering sweet rapture. The Shilling composed herself before he finally opened his eyes again. His countenance had changed to delighted and self-assured.
I thank you, Shilling, he intoned reverentially. I shall never doubt your regard again. I am most relieved and thankful for your solicitude.
You are welcome, she responded convincingly enough to elicit a smile from her protector. Now, if you would let me in, I have some reading I need to do.
At once, Shilling, he said enthusiastically, crossing to and opening the dark wooden door engraved with a golden rose. The Shilling went in quickly and he shut the door behind her. Guilt instantly pressed in upon her at every side, and she placed her veil on her desk and paced about the room wringing her hands. She had kissed a man that wasn't the Ha'ulric, and had enjoyed it enough to almost let it go too far.
It did go too far, she scolded herself. It should have never happened. I have endangered this world and everyone in it because I am a silly girl.
She knew the right thing to do would be to confess to her mother and the prelate, but she dared not do it. As guilty as she felt, she would not let her own stupidity hurt Dayson, for they would remove him from his post immediately and bring down a shame and dishonor on him and his family that would last forever. They might even kill Dayson for what he had done. She knelt at her bed immediately and asked Eldaloth his forgiveness, although the prayer, she felt, did not travel much beyond the confines of her room. Such a transgression would require severe repentance on her part, and she mentally resolved to focus her thoughts on the Ha'ulric more firmly, only wishing that she knew more of him, so she had a more solid foundation from which to proceed. Turning to the tapestry above her bed, she stared at the man there, bold and handsome, holding aloft a sword in one hand and holding hers in the other. If she had nothing but a caricature to latch onto, then that would have to do. As penance, she resolved to stare at the tapestry for an hour each day before dawn, while the winter lasted. While her efforts let her guilt dim, her enjoyment of Dayson's company in the following days always allowed it to flame anew. As the winter deepened, she set every hope on the day her Ha'ulric would walk off of his ship on King's Blood Lake and into her life. Then she felt she could truly make restitution for her mistake. But every time she saw Dayson standing in the hallway, that blessed day seemed long in coming. Weeks of weariness, torture, and training added to Jen's burgeoning store of skills and toned his body, but while he learned to ignore physical pain, the unrelenting anguish muddled his discordant mind. Gradually even that sensation was denied him, and he became a mindless shell, scraping by from one day to the next. He no longer cared for anyone or anything. There was training, but there was eating. There was sleep, with its dreams of fighting, strategy, and war. He felt he had lived through the McKickian Wars, and the images, blood-soaked and gory, no longer sickened or shocked him. The Shadan's exercises tuned Jen's muscles to the point of breaking. Jen pulled carts full of rocks, held buckets of water extended in his hands, and ran great distances at all times of day and in any weather. Thanks to hours of fighting blinded and the enhancing effect of the stones, Jen's hearing and reflexes had sharpened to where he could hear a pebble moving through the air in his direction. While always centred on the sword, his lessons at times deviated to fighting with other weapons, or with no weapons at all. His body continued to change, gathering strength, speed, and awareness. His voice widened in range and intensity, a gift to help him be heard in the thick of the battle, the voice of command, as Telmarin called it. He saw Raphael and Regina little. At first he avoided them because it pained them to see him. Now the neglect of his friends was routine, and his deep apathy prevented him from wondering what they thought or felt. Even hearing Regina crying in the next room out of loneliness or fear failed to stir him. A few weeks later, Jen awoke late, the sun already shining outside. Torbrand had always roused him before dawn. Jen thought nothing of it, stretching his muscles and rubbing the grit from his eyes. During the night, Telmarin had instructed him on advanced, mounted warfare. He was the only one who fought on horseback of his three masters, while Samian and Elberon combined to instruct him more thoroughly on the bow. The instruction that had burned into the very muscles of his body made him feel as if he had done it 100 times before, despite relatively scant practice. Jen left his room, passing into the hall. Torbrand Cairn hummed to himself in the front room, Jen finding him, as he often was, with feet on the table, drinking a steaming mug of ale. Raphael was gagged and bound in a corner of the room. The old bard grunted furiously, as if trying to signal something to his former pupil. Jen knew he should feel shock, pain, and anger at his former master's plight, but an extinguished spirit and a mind crammed with violence cast even the most depraved sights into an inconsequential light. Death and pain were his constant friends. Seeing them near was no more surprising than finding breakfast on the table. Torbrand smiled mischievously.
There you are. I wondered when you would drag yourself out of that bed of yours. Sit, eat. There is plenty, and I think you will find the fare rather better than usual.
Jen knew the Shadan was up to something, but he was beyond caring. Raphael continued to grunt, eventually settling into a quiet sobbing. Jen ignored him and started to eat. The food was of a finer quality, a sumptuous apple pie and moist, dark bread with butter. As his master seemed in no hurry, Jen wasn't either.
You may wonder at the sudden improvement of our victuals. I must confess that I am upset with you a little on this score. Why did you not tell me that Lorelian Fairweather was 10 times the cook that Regina is? I can scarce forgive you for forcing me to eat Regina's parade of the overcooked and under-seasoned for more than 2 months.
Jen stopped eating. Something pushed its way through the smothering emptiness within him. Where was Regina?
And there it is, Torbrand exclaimed, standing. A spark! So far I have taught you the banishment of emotion, broken you down and burned your soul to ash. But I left a little ember burning from which to kindle a fire, for the fiercest of fighters are not those who are devoid of passion, but those who are filled with it. You are wondering where Regina is, yes?
Yes, Shadan, Jen answered, striving to keep the urgency out of his voice. He wouldn't give Torbrand the satisfaction.
Very well. See how this feels. Last night, after you were abed, I dragged Regina and Hubert into the chapel and there had the pure man marry them. I know it is a bit out of season for your country, but not unheard of. For their wedding gift, I let them leave town a bit before dawn this morning to go wherever they wished. What do you think of that?
Jen was confused. Why would Torbrand free her? For Mina's sake? Torbrand stroked his beard.
It seems that I am forgetting something about the whole affair, though. Now what was it? I just can't remember. I think Raphael may know. Let's ask him, shall we?
With a precise sword strike, the Shadan cut Raphael's gag near where it wrapped around his ear. Raphael, still bound, spit the gag out.
He sent Captain Omar to bring them back, boy, just before breakfast. He'll kill them, he will. Oh, that's right!
The Shadan mocked.
I sent Omar to fetch them. But you know Omar. He'll have a hard time keeping his sword in his scabbard when it comes to Hubert. He wasn't very kind to Regina either when you and I were away at Elene, was he, Raphael?
Jen stared expectantly at Raphael, who hung his head to hide his emotion. Anger stirred in Jen's stagnant heart. "What did he do to her, Raphael?" Jen demanded. Raphael turned his gaze on Jen.
He hurt her, Jen.
Jen's eyes widened involuntarily. She had never said a word. Raphael had never mentioned it. Anger turned to rage and desperation.
"Here, Jen," Torbran said, "take my sword. Don't worry about the stones holding you back. I can let you wander as far as I will. I think they went in the direction of Sipton."
Jen didn't bother to buckle the sword. He sprinted out the door and ran down the road at a dead run for as long as his lungs could take it. The air was bitter chill, and the trees dusted over with dry snow that swirled with the slightest breeze. Thin grey clouds denied the sun its full strength, the world below cold and lifeless in the weak light. These details barely registered to Jen, who scanned the ground in front of him. The trail was easy to find on the untravelled, snowy road. Regina and Hubert walked slowly, Regina slightly behind him. Omar followed the trail jogging, and Jen set off again at the best pace he could manage. He cursed himself for not taking Raphael's cue, cursed himself for lingering at breakfast. He pushed aside the guilt. It would serve him no purpose. Trees whipped by as Jen did his calculations. If Hubert and Regina left a little before dawn, then by the time Omar left, they would have had an hour's head start, and on the poor road had likely gone little more than a mile. At a jog, Omar would have caught them just about the time Jen finished his bread. Redoubling his efforts, Jen pressed on, taking advantage of a trail blazed through the drifts and difficult spots by those ahead, affording him a small advantage. He reined in his imagination of what Omar would do to his victims when he caught them, concentrating on jogging as efficiently as he could, cutting any corners at every opportunity. Abruptly, the trail turned off the road and into the wood. Jen walked over quickly, examining the surrounding area. Here, Hubert and Regina rested, and here they discovered their pursuer. They had risen in a rush, and the distance between footfalls widened as the pair had sprinted into the forest. In contrast, Omar's narrowed. He had found his prey and relaxed his pace. Jen charged forward, the way easy enough to find, though difficult to negotiate. Deadfall and underbrush, concealed beneath the snow, conspired to trip him almost as if purposefully barring his way. But his training made him nimble and strong, and he pressed forward with fervent haste. The tracks he followed indicated that Omar still had not increased his pace, but Regina and Hubert had slowed, surely exhausted from the labor of so difficult an escape. Jen stopped and listened. He had to be close. He took the time to buckle the Shadan's sword about his waist to free up his arms as the trail slanted up the side of a difficult hill. Jen wondered why Hubert or Regina would choose to go upward, where they would be more exposed. A snapping branch to his left turned his head upward. Above him, some 50 yards, he could just see Omar heading straight up the hill away from Hubert and Regina's path. He wanted to cut them off and meet them at the top. The sight of Shadan Cairn's captain rekindled fire in Jen's heart, and knowing that he had hurt Regina during his absence infuriated him. Jen turned and clawed up the hill directly after him, crashing through brittle, low-hanging branches and twigs, using the boles of the trees to propel himself upward.
"Come on, boy,"
Omar taunted, twisting to yell down the hill.
"I'll kill you too, and rid us all of Ken's stupid project. Hubert and the girl go first, though. Come stop me."
Omar resumed his climb, redoubling his efforts. His squat legs made quick work of the remaining distance to the top. By the time Jen crested the hill, he couldn't see Omar through the thick grove of thin pine trees. Sprinting forward, lungs afire, Jen finally caught a glimpse of his opponent as he cleared the hilltop and started down the other side.
"Hubert!" Regina yelled. "He is coming!"
In a moment, he saw them through the branches of a dead pine. They were resting in a small clearing, wearing fur cloaks against the cold. Both had stood up from where they were sitting on a log. Hubert held a stout stick, a club, for defense, but upon seeing Captain Omar charging down the hill, sword drawn, and snow exploding away from the thrashing of his legs, the Scholz's oldest son abandoned Regina and ran, leaping over the banks of a small, frozen creek. Regina ran to Jen's left into the forest. Thankfully, Omar pursued Hubert first, and Jen altered his course, intercepting Regina, who screamed at his unexpected appearance. Jen grabbed her hand.
"Up the hill and over! Quickly, Regina!"
She did not wear her veil, and the weight of her fear and desperation landed heavily on Jen's heart. resurrecting it from its lifeless despair. Hoping Hubert was faster than he looked, Jen half dragged Regina up the littered slope, heedless of the clawing branches that ripped clothes and flesh. A horrified yell signalled Hubert's end. Time was short. Jen cast about, searching for any way to hide their tracks, but the snow rendered it impossible.
"Where are you, boy?"
Omar yelled from behind. 100 yards. They couldn't escape him. He only had one idea left. Finding a large, mature pine with easily climbable branches, he led Regina around its far side.
"Climb as high as you can, Regina," Jen ordered.
She regarded him briefly, eyes pained, conveying all the hurt and anger his inattention had caused her. She had been humiliated and scared, and he had done nothing to comfort or help her in her distress. He had left her to the cruelty of Omar and the Shadan, wrapped himself in his own hurt, and hadn't been a friend or lover to her when she needed his affection the most. Guilt poisoned Jen's heart, mixing with his rage as he watched her climb, snow falling about him as she dislodged it. There was only one redemption, to save her now. As quietly as he could, he pulled the Shadan's blade from its sheath, laying the scabbard on the ground. Their footprints would lead Omar to where they were.
"You're sending her up a tree, then?"
Omar mocked, still obscured by the branches, but close.
"I'll beat you for that. I'm tired of this chase."
The cocky captain took no pains to be silent or careful, as each footstep brought him inexorably closer to his prey. A wind in the pines blew snow from the branches in a fine dust, and for a moment Omar stopped. Jen could just see his boots on the other side of the trunk. Jen leapt out and swung his sword at Omar's square head. The captain blocked, a mighty clang ringing through the forest, startling the winter birds. Omar pushed the blade aside and riposted, forcing Jen to leap aside, the snow hampering his ability to move. Omar's thrust tore through Jen's cloak, narrowly missing his belly. Jen slapped Omar's blade to the ground and swung left, gashing the captain's arm. Omar, employing his training, didn't grimace or grunt, but after squaring off, he approached Jen more carefully. To help his defense, Jen backed around the thin bole of a tall pine with no branches lower than his head. They circled slowly, Jen keeping the tree between him and his attacker. Omar lunged forward, forcing Jen away from the tree and charged. Jen backed down carefully from the assault, wanting to move farther downhill and away from Regina's sanctuary in the tree, but Omar herded him toward it at every opportunity. Sword strokes came fiercely but sporadically. Branches, underbrush, and slippery footing kept the pace of the fight irregular. Wide swings were virtually impossible, and they had to settle for quick flicks and lunges at each other, neither able to gain advantage. Sweat ran down both of their faces. As they moved horizontally, staring at each other intently, they found themselves in a small break in the trees. Both charged, and blows rained down. Jen's fury powered him forward, Omar inching backward. Once the more seasoned warrior had weathered Jen's angry attack, he pushed back with his own. Omar was powerful and fast, and he beat at Jen with every ounce of strength his burly arm could deliver. Jen was more than equal to the speed, but Omar's power wore him down, driving him back into a tangle of fallen trees. Omar, seeing his opponent trapped, lunged forward. Jen dodged away and knocked the blade aside, but in the process he stepped into some branches, and his right boot got caught under the tangle. In the momentary distraction, Omar rushed. Jen chopped at him, blade slicing the captain's ribs, but Omar was inside his guard now. Omar pinned Jen's sword arm against his side with his muscular biceps and kicked at Jen's trapped knee, breaking it with a sickening crack. Pain flooded over Jen, but as he had been taught, he ignored it, remaining standing on his good leg.
"Got you now, boy," Omar grinned.
Jen head-butted him, forehead ramming into the captain's mouth. Omar's head snapped back, but he held Jen's arm fast. With a bloodied snarl, Omar broke Jen's other knee, and the boy crumpled to the ground.
"Time to climb a tree,"
Omar jeered, wiping the blood from his lips on his sleeve.
"Don't worry, you get to see her die."
Omar walked away and noisily started his ascent up the tree. Jen extricated his foot from the bramble and dragged himself along the ground hand over hand toward the tree, sword left behind. Regina was whimpering and yelling, "No!" over and over again. Jen looked up just as Omar grabbed her foot and she kicked at his head. He yanked hard and she tumbled, bones breaking as she slammed into one branch after another, falling near Jen in a shower of pine needles and twigs. Jen crawled to her, fingers raw and numb. Blonde hair spilled over a pale face, blood running from her nose as she breathed in ragged gasps. Her eyes were unfocused and vacant, and she mumbled, "Jen?" as if searching for him in the dark. Tears ran down his face.
"I'm sorry, Regina. I'm sorry."
He went to reach for her face, to reassure her that he was there, but Omar crushed his hand with a heavy boot. An instant later, he beheaded her, her lifeblood melting the snow around her. Jen yelled a curse and rolled onto his back, racking sobs overcoming him. He barely heard Omar say, "And now for you."
"Leave him, Omar!"
Shadan Cairn jogged over the hill and Omar held up, face disappointed and a little fearful.
"I did not give you leave to kill anyone but Hubert,"
the Shadan yelled.
"I told you that she was not to be harmed and Jen left alive. What have you done? Answered me."
"She climbed a tree. I went to fetch her and she fell. I killed her out of mercy. She was nearly dead already."
"Liar!"
Jen spat in agony, vision too blurry to see either of them.
"He wanted to kill her in front of me."
"And I see the boy marked you, Omar. How many times?"
"3. He should be killed, Shadan. He is too good for one so young in his training. He is too dangerous."
"Ha!"
the Shadan laughed.
"Dangerous to you. You lied. You killed her out of spite, and there will be consequences. The first is that I will not heal you. The second is that you must carry her back to Tell and dig a grave for her, and a deep one, so that no animal can disturb it. This respect you must pay."
"But the ground is frozen, Shadan,"
Omar protested. The Shadan slapped him.
"Trust me. These are the least of your punishments. I promised my daughter that this girl would not be killed. Now I will have to explain to her that she is dead, and that displeases me, Captain Omar. Now shut your ignorant mouth and get her back to Tell."
The Shadan healed Jen and retrieved his sword and belt from him. Jen was despondent, barely registering their return trip to town. As he walked, he found the only escape from the pain was to seek the dark void the Shadan had fashioned within him with brutality. But even then, something was different. His heart burned with purpose. He would have revenge. He wanted it now more than health, happiness, or escape. Once in Tell, the Shadan sent him to his room for the balance of the day. When night fell, Raphael brought him food, his eyes swollen and face gaunt. He promised to come see him when he could and left. Jen didn't touch the food but sat, arms around his knees in a corner of the room as emotion drained out of him, leaving him even deader than he felt before. The calm, dispassionate void locked itself into place, for he could no longer bear his pain, and the only way to avoid pain was to feel nothing at all. And so Raphael found him in the middle of the night, having sneaked from his room against all caution.
"Jen," he whispered as he sat beside him, "are you awake?"
"You should go. He'll kill you if he finds you here." The coldness of his voice no longer surprised him. Even in the dark, he could sense Raphael's hurt.
"Listen, boy,"
he said, voice firm as when he used to school Jen in law or singing.
"I had to see you. I'm sorry about Regina. I loved her too. But you cannot let him have the victory. I'm as angry as you are, but he's killing you, Jen. I don't know to what end, but he is making you his. Fight it, Jen. Find your heart again."
Raphael crouched and put his arm on Jen's shoulder. Jen flinched away and stood.
"You should go, Raphael."
Raphael also came to his feet. After muffling a fit of coughing, the old man started toward the door, head bent in weariness. Several moments of silence passed. Raphael finally said,
"I love you, Jen, and I'm sorry,"
and slipped out the door. Jen returned to his corner and sat numbly. All night long, Omar labored outside his window, cursing as he chopped over and over at the frozen earth in his attempts to excavate a grave the Shadan would find satisfactory. His every stroke reminded Jen of the fatal blow to Regina, and he fixed her face in his mind as he saw it when they danced on the day before the Ogmerian invasion. That was what Omar had taken from him, and what he would pay for. Hours passed. The dawn broke through his window. Jen hadn't noticed when Omar had stopped digging, but Jen stood and opened the shutters, finding a fresh mound of earth free of snow. Jen stared at it until the Shadan opened the door, crossing to where he stood in front of the window.
"You've been holding back when we sparred," he began. "That was obvious from your ability to even mark Omar, much less three times. A nice little trick, hiding your abilities. You might think that I would be mad about that, but I am not. You are a quick learner and a clever one, and that pleases me. I had no idea what would happen when I placed all three stones upon you at once. I thought you would go mad. Instead, you have learned more quickly than any other student I have taught. In another month, you will likely be as good as Captain Omar. And so my dilemma. The captain was right about one thing. You should not be as good as you are. He would have me kill you before you get too dangerous. But to be quite honest, I'm enjoying myself a little too much to let that happen. Besides, I assured the good captain that as long as I had Raphael, you would be quite tame. In fact, I'm planning to let you visit the old man more often now."
Torbrand leaned in close.
"I liked the fire I saw smouldering in your eyes yesterday. Raphael will be your little reminder to keep that alive. When a passion to fight for something consumes you, and you can yet feel calm, empty, and in control, then you will be truly formidable. I anticipate standing toe to toe with that, Jen, come spring."
Torbrand left, closing the door quietly. Jen's mind played Regina's death over and over again. The Shadan used his friends to trap him, and the only way out was to kill his master, something he could not do. In the cold stillness, he realized that ending Torbrand's life, or dying in the attempt, was the only way to end the torture, avenge Regina, and possibly secure Raphael's life. The only way he had a chance was to endure a little more, to learn all that the cruel Shadan could teach him, and then attack when given the opportunity. At last, he had what he needed to survive. A purpose.